are times, I feel, probably for most of us, when we've been in the presence of a young child and felt ourselves to be moved and touched by the grace and the beauty that they embody. And the grace and the beauty of a young child is not so much in their appearance or their presentation. The grace and beauty of a young child is not so much in what they look like or what they do, but rather the grace and the beauty of a young child, I feel, is much more in their lack of self-consciousness, a lack that can be so very open. The grace and beauty, I feel, is more in the innocence, the quality of innocence that they embody. It's a quality which a young child can bring to life, which can make the present moment, the perception of it, seem entirely magical. The universe is simply a constantly unfolding process of mystery and fascination. It's an innocence which brings a sense of awe. You know, for a young child to look at a ripple in a pond, at a leaf, at a tiny insect moving, has a sense of being magnetized by it, appreciating it, without needing to know its antecedents, without needing to have proof or evidence worthiness and its significance, without having to understand its process and its dynamics and what it can do for them. There's a sense of wonder and a sense of innocence. It means that smile and joy comes with immediacy, just as pain is felt with a sense of immediacy. The innocence, I feel, of a young child that we are often so much touched by is in that immediacy of their connection with the moment. It's that very connection which brings a magic, sense of magic and mystery to perception. It's a connection, a way of seeing, which is free of prejudice, which asks for no evidence or proof of worth or of significance. It's an innocence which is at times manifested in a thirst for life, a thirst to be present, a thirst to see, a thirst to explore, a thirst which is expressed in the eagerness with which a young child can often desire to explore its own horizon, its own possibilities in the world. When we are around that kind of playfulness of a child, and we too are vulnerable in thought, we often find, we must have it, difficult to resist even the delight that is manifested in a child's innocence, the delight of their playfulness. And we find ourselves being touched by their open-heartedness and by their vulnerability. And probably at times we wonder, too, what has happened to that quality of innocence within ourselves? What has happened to that magic within our own vision that has allowed us to see with such freshness and immediacy at times in our lives? We, too, were children. We, too, once. We're in that place where we started to listen to the sounds of the universe, when we could be totally and entirely present, when we knew that vitality of connection. There has been a time in our own lives when we could see and be and listen without blame. There may seem to have seen that innocence. May seem at times in our life, but it's a tragedy, and we lose it at somehow we lose that connection. It seems sad, and yet it also seems obviously and entirely necessary in our life that we must lose that quality of innocence, because we know that so much of that innocence of a very young child relies upon not knowing, relies upon not knowing a great deal of things which have become memories, which have become stored in our consciousness. We know that we can't shut out the world as such. And we know in our own experience that although there is beauty in the world, there is a kind of magic at times in our perception, we know too that the world holds a great deal of conflict and a great deal of suffering, at times a great deal of pain. And we know too that for us to live in this world, we have to know and learn ways of surviving as individuals in a world which is at times threatening, which at times calls upon us to be competitive, to be ambitious. We know too that functioning in this world we live in means that we at times strive for security and a sense of safety, that we must make effort to look for what we want and to fulfill our needs. And at times it seems that part of coming to maturity, part of growing up, is in a way learning to slightly harden our hearts. That in a way a part of growing up seems to be leaving behind that it's that quality of innocence. And although we may envy it at times when we see a child playing or delighting in a simple thing, we don't always feel saddened over the loss, but because we feel we are aware of the potential that there is in that quality of innocence that relies upon not knowing. We know that that quality of innocence means a deep and immense vulnerability, an immense capacity to be hurt and to be undermined. And we know that when there is innocence without wisdom, there is endless potential for being undermined, for experiencing pain. And all of that we're glad, actually glad, to leave behind. I'm glad to leave behind that capacity to be hurt, to be so affected by the world that we live in. And it seems that perhaps it is impossible to live in the world as we know it, in the world as we experience it, while maintaining, sustaining that quality of innocence within ourselves. Yet in the busyness of our maturity, in the busyness of becoming this or that, in the busyness of directing our lives, in the busyness of fulfilling our needs and our wants and our desires, it must strike us at times that we have actually lost something that is rather irreplaceable. That we have actually lost something that is somehow precious. And we probably find ourselves at times in our lives yearning for that quality of freshness, for that quality of openness, and wonder whether it is possible to be innocent and also wise. Whether it's possible to be vulnerable and also strong. Whether maturity has to mean the loss of openness and the loss of that capacity to be moved deeply by simplicity. And we perhaps can question whether it's not possible in the midst of our own complexity to be connected with the true quality simplicity and of presence. Can we live without prejudice? Can we live without blame? Can we actually know what it means at an experiential level to see with eyes of innocence? It's an important question for us to ask. It seems to me that many of the directions that we pursue in our lives, many of the projects that we evolve, many of the choices that we make, even much of our practice is inspired on some level by that yearning to recapture that quality of freshness and openness and simplicity in our lives. We try and rediscover a sense of creativity in our lives. We try in our relationships to recover and rediscover that real capacity to be moved, that immediacy of connection, that sensitivity and openness of heart. And our practice, in a very real way, is all about learning how to see anew, how to see freshly, how to see with eyes that are not colored by prejudice, by blame, by distortion. Learning how to see without conditioning, without the need for evidence before. So much of our practice is actually about that. What is it? Is it just time that erodes that sense of simplicity? Is it just time that undermines and erodes that sense of innocence within ourselves, that undermines that pureness of perception and that immediacy of connection with the moment? Is it nothing more than time that means that we can't be moved or find it difficult to be moved in our lives anymore simply by simplicity? Is it just time that means that we can't or don't know how any longer actually to move in the world with a sense of grace? Surely it is not just the passing of years. It seems to me that that quality of immediacy, of connection, that quality of innocence is eroded much more by the lessons that we learn at the feet of pain and pleasure. It's made that much more that that quality of innocence is eroded through the relationships, the distorted relationships we create in relationship to pain and pleasure. It seems to me that that quality of innocence is also eroded by the sense of self-consciousness that grows in our lives and that actually then becomes a burden to us. To watch a child grow is to watch and see a process of exploration. The child grows, it reaches out to the world, it reaches out to explore the sense of the world, what the world is about. Initially, in the life of a very young child, that exploration is fearless. It's an exploration of trust. With that exploration, the world expands. The world of a young child expands. Their knowing of it, their awareness of it, the sense of what the world is actually expands through exploration. One of the lessons learned in that exploration is the lesson of pain. It's something we learn very early in our lives. We learn that the world affects us. We learn that there are things in the world, situations in the world, people in the world that have the power to inflict pain upon us. And the expanding of our world is expanding of the power of the world in our relationship to it. What we learn about pain begins a sense of self-consciousness, a sense of self-awareness. I can suffer. I can suffer. One of our first lessons. Equally, one of our first lessons is I can create suffering. I can create pain. Those very first lessons, I feel, begin to undermine the fearlessness and the trust with which we may have approached the world. At times we learn that it's skillful to be afraid, that there are things that hurt us, that there are experiences that can create pain, that there are people who do not necessarily hold our well-being. Sometimes we learn that some fear, some caution, is a skillful tool in our life. But we also learn to harbor memories of pain. We also learn to harbor memories of the unpleasant experience, and we learn to seek to avoid their repetition. We learn to seek to defend ourselves against the possibility of pain. The possibility that is carried and superimposed through memory, and that is surely one of the first erosions of our innocence. As our understanding deepens, we learn how to avoid the world. We learn how to create avenues of avoidance. We harbor not only memories of pain, we also harbor memories of the present experience. And in our immaturity, we learn to demand pleasure. We want to own it, we want to possess it, and we want to maintain it. We want to call it mine. The first lessons in our lives are all about pain and pleasure. We learn that we can be hurt, and we learn to avoid it. We also think or begin to believe that the sources of pain and the sources of pleasure lie primarily outside of ourselves. Out of that struggle with pain and pleasure begins prejudice. It is born of that struggle with pain and pleasure. Prejudice is expressed in our desire to control, to pursue what we see as offering us the pleasant sensation, to avoid what we see as offering us the unpleasant sensation. It's the first manifestation of our prejudice against the world. We begin in our struggle with pain and pleasure, we also begin to struggle with the world. The more we manage to avoid pain, reinforces our fear of it. The desire to own and to control pleasure reinforces our addiction to it, and the world becomes divided between these polarities. There is that which offers pain, there is that which offers pleasure. And our success as a person, our own sense of power as a person, rests upon our success in the struggle, rests upon our success in being able to attain as much as we can of the pleasant experience, and as much as we can to avoid the unpleasant experience. Our sense of power as a person rests upon this. As we grow too, we learn not only about our own power, we learn about the power of the world, and we learn about the power of other people. We learn that pain and pleasure are not just physical sensations. Much more, we find our consciousness beginning to be marked by pain and pleasure. We learn that pain and pleasure can be imposed and experienced emotionally and psychologically. That pain and pleasure can also seem to rest in sources outside of ourselves. Can be given through praise and approval. And we also learn the effect and the impact of disapproval and blame. And those, again, can become the pillars of our survival. Learning to how to get the praise and the approval, because we equate the pleasure. Learning how to avoid the disapproval and the blame, because they seem to strike at the very core of our being. It seems too, in our very growth, that so often the sources of our own well-being seem to lie outside in what other people dispense to us, the feedback that we receive. So we learn a lot in our lives, the lessons about how to win pleasure, how to win approval, how to win acceptance, how to win affirmation through becoming, through conformity, through owning, through possessing. And we learn how the ways and the means to avoid painful. In that learning, our freedom to move in the world is shattered. Essentially shattered, because we feel we have to work so much along the avenues of avoidance and pursuit. We can't walk any longer or move any longer in the world in a way of trust, in a sense of trust and fearlessness. Instead, we learn to guard ourselves. We learn to shelter in things. And our self-consciousness in that grows and is power. Our sense of self as something to need. We need to guard or protect or something to need us. And we are burdened. In a very real way, we are burdened and we are inhibited by the lessons that we learn and the experiences that we store. We've become inhibited in very real and direct ways by our self-consciousness, our grace turns into a sense of guardedness. Our trust, often tempered by suspicion, the magic of just being present, perceiving the presence of the moment, is replaced by demands for evidence of work, qualifications of work, rather than the presence of simply seeing, simply being, simply feeling. Instead, we find ourselves measuring and evaluating objects, people, and situations in terms of their worth to us. They are made worthy by their capacity to give us pleasure. They are dismissed through their capacity to seemingly create pain. In that measuring, in that self-consciousness that grows, object consciousness grows, and we become consumed by possessing, by being able to say I am and I have and I know, because this becomes our measure of our ability to control our mind. And our simplicity is replaced sometimes by too much knowing, by simply too much knowing. And our capacity is simply to be present with the presence of all things. It's suffocated by our need to have and our need to own and control. Our capacity just to be is inhibited by our yearning to become someone, by our yearning to become something. Our very learning or the lessons that we integrate become a burden and a barrier to us, a barrier to really being present inwardly and outwardly. In our learning and our knowledge that the world becomes separated from ourselves, there is I and you, there is us and them, there is self and other, there is inner and outer. And that very separation is the breeding ground for prejudice, for division, and for conflict. That separation means that we have to construct a way of being with the world, often even constructing a sense of ethics, because we are so disconnected from the world that we need to construct a set of ethics. In an immediacy of true connection with all of life and with ourselves, there's never a need to construct a sense of ethics. There is ethics in that connection because there's a knowing, a deep knowing, an intuitive knowing, that to harm another person or to harm the world in any way is to harm ourselves. But when the world is separated from ourselves, when there is self and other, we need to construct a sense of ethics because everything must be weighed on the scales of our self-interest, on the scales of our fear, on the scales of our defensiveness, on the scales of worthiness and unworthiness projected onto objects. In that process of being disconnected from that sense of innocence, we learn in our movements in the world how to guard ourselves and how to arm ourselves. And the very need to guard and to arm ourselves in a very real way is an expression of our belief in disconnection, our belief in separation. It's a belief that is expressed and manifested in the disguises or the camouflage that we adopt in our lives. Disguises that seem to create a sense of being someone, having something, knowing something. And we see all that as necessary in order to avoid pain. because we see pain, pain as being inherent in not having and not knowing, we equate the absence of control with vulnerability and weakness. And at times vulnerability then and weakness is simply terrifying to us. In the erosion of innocence, we cannot perceive the world in its suchness. We cannot perceive or find it difficult to perceive the world or ourselves just in presence. We must always demand proof of value. And that demand for proof of value of worth is not just extended outwardly. We extend that same demand inwardly towards ourselves so that we don't know how to be anymore. We simply do not know how to be. We must prove our worthiness as a person. And our worthiness is proved to ourselves by our success and control, by our ability to control pain and pleasure, by our ability to avoid pain and sustain pleasure. We become so accustomed to measuring and evaluating ourselves by our credential and our cross that we actually come to believe that we are nothing apart from our cross. We come to believe that we are nothing apart from what I am, what I have, what I know, what I can become. We come to believe that we're nothing apart from the various credentials, the qualifications of our personalities, the evidence of our work. And we live, so then, we live in fear often of losing our credentials, losing our qualifications in some way because we're afraid of being vulnerable. So we take great care at times in constructing our presentation to the world. We take great care in constructing a presentation that hopefully will bring the maximum amount of approval and affirmation and protect us in the greatest way from disapproval or challenge. And yet it takes such energy to sustain those desires. It takes such energy to be constantly in the pursuit of becoming someone, of having knowing something. It takes such energy to be invulnerable. We don't always appreciate just how much energy that takes us to be constantly avoiding pain, or the possibility of pain and pursuing pleasure can become such a central mission in our lives, and it consumes so much energy that we do not know how to be it anymore. And at times it becomes a test. A test of our worth. And at times when we fail, we feel so inadequate or so worthless, and we feel it's my fault. And at times we feel it's so much my fault that the solution to being inadequate or the solution to failure is simply to try harder at becoming, to try harder to become something else or to become something more, to be stronger in our opinions or in our sense. And again, the whole dance begins and the whole cycle begins and we become immersed and involved. So we forget to question whether it's all worthwhile. Whether that's really what we want to be doing in our lives. It's pursuing disconnection. Whether what we really want to be doing in our lives is pursuing that sense of separation, that kind of invulnerability. Is it possible for us to see with eyes of innocence? Is it possible for us to be truly open to ourselves and to the moment? To leave behind our prejudices? Is it possible to leave behind us ways of being that are based upon fear of emptiness? Is it possible for us to learn just how to be? It doesn't rely, I feel, upon undoing our conditioning. And learning how to be, truly to be, and to see with innocence, doesn't rely upon an absence of longing can be very much a part of our wisdom. We need to learn from our mistakes. We need to learn from our life experience. And if we can't learn from our life experience, of course, then we have to keep on repeating it endlessly in our lives. And if we can't learn from our past, then we have to keep on endlessly repeating our past against different backgrounds in the present. Innocence doesn't depend upon a cessation of learning or undoing our conditioning in some way. Our practice, I feel, in a very real way, is all about rediscovering that quality of innocence and presence, rediscovering an understanding and a connection, a way of seeing in which we see the suchness, the presence of life, the suchness, the presence, the essence of ourselves. A seeing without filters and prejudice, a seeing without demands for proof of worthiness, a seeing of dharmas without blame. My practice, I think, is essentially about learning how to see dharmas without blame. Everything is dharma. Everything in the world around us is dharma. It is the present. It is present. It embodies all presence. We too embody suchness, embody presence in different manifestations. Blame is projected onto all dharma through not just our labels, but all the associations that our labels have of worth and unworthiness. Blame is projected through our projection of pain and pleasure onto objects. Blame is projected through our prejudice, through the filter through which our seeing and our hearing and our capacity to touch moves. Blame is also projected inwardly onto our own dharma, our own presence. Blame is projected with our judgment, with our defense, with our armor. Blame is projected through our need to control and our need to own a distorted sense of power. Innocence is, I feel, just seeing presence, to see dharma without blame, without filter, without prejudice in any way. Our practice is learning essentially how to open clearly, consciously, in an awake way to this moment, to the presence of this moment, not to what we think about it, not to our ideas about it, to what is. It's learning a kind of wise vulnerability. Our practice, I feel, is learning how to open to not knowing and not having and not becoming. Present with all things, how to be truly present with all things. When we can be truly present with all things, we are still. We are so silent in the space. Because when you look at the noise that we experience inwardly, it's the noise of our endeavor not to be present, because of fear. When we look at the noise we experience inwardly, our noise is all about avoidance and resistance and clinging and grasping. Our noise that we experience is all about our endeavors not to be present, because in some way there is fear of it. As we learn to open slowly and patiently to not having and not becoming and not knowing, that noise stills. Have a sense of silence amidst movement. We have a sense of silence amidst movement. movement because there is a struggle with pain or with pleasure. Struggle that gets manifested in our desire to modify, to manipulate, to judge. Our practice is about just seeing. Just seeing. Nothing more. Just seeing. Not measuring, not evaluating, not comparing, not distorting. Rather, an open-hearted mindfulness. In the stillness that comes, an open-hearted mindfulness, there is just unfoldment. Just unfoldment. And there is a sense of magic in that perception. The present moment just unfolding. The part of life here is not so much about doing, although that's one part of our practice, cultivating. On another level, our practice is all about getting out. It is a way of not interfering with the unfoldment of the moment as it is. And as we learn the richness and the stillness that there is in being present, we learn how to see anew. We learn the capacity to see anew when each moment is a new beginning. When each moment is totally unique. When each moment offers us a gift, an open-hearted gift. Possibility of richness, of seeing, of feeling, of touching, of being touched. It's a seeing anew where there is no blame and no prejudice, where there's no need for evidence of worthiness. And in that stillness, there's no fear of emptiness. There's no fear of emptiness. Learning how to be present, you know, in the presence of all things. Learning how to be truly present in the presence of all things is rediscovering that sense of what it means to walk freely in the world. Rediscovering what it means to walk freely in the world, because when there are dharmas without brain, there is no fear. No fear of emptiness. It's a wise vulnerability. A wise vulnerability of truly understanding what it means to be present in the suchness of all things. Present, truly present in the presence of all things. And established in that presence, there is a true sense of wise.